Today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, I will be speaking about the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's travels to South India, to the holy places. But I will be focusing not so much on Mahaprabhu's interactions and pastimes in this series of lectures. Rather, I was asked to focus on the places themselves, the holy places and the temples, and to speak about them. So while I will mention the certain pastimes that Mahaprabhu performed there, but it will be in brief, and the focus will be on the places themselves. So we'll start by reciting this verse from the Madhya Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 7, The Lord's Tour of South India, Text 113. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the holy place known as Kurma Kshetra, he saw the deity and offered prayers and obeisances. Purport. Kurmasthan is a well-known place of pilgrimage. There is a temple there of Kurmadeva. In the Prapannamrita, it is said that Lord Jagannath took Sri Ramanujacharya from Jagannath Puri and one night threw him to Kurmakshetra. Kurmakshetra is situated on the line of the Southern Railway in India. One has to go to the railway station known as Chikakola Road. From this station, one goes 8 miles to the east to reach the holy place known as Kurmachala. Those who speak the Telugu language consider this holy place very important. This statement is reported in the government gazette known as the Ganjam Manual. There is the deity of Kurma there, and as mentioned above, Srila Ramanujacharya was thrown from Jagannath Puri to this place. At that time, he thought that the deity of Kurma was Lord Shiva's deity. Therefore, he was fasting there. Later, when he understood that the Kurma Murti was another form of Lord Vishnu, he instituted very gorgeous worship of Lord Kurma. This statement is found in the Prapannamrita, Chapter 36. The holy place of Kurmakshetra or Kurmasthan was actually re-established by Sripad Ramanujacharya under the influence of Lord Jagannath Dev at Jagannath Puri. Later, the temple came under the jurisdiction of the king of Vijayanagara. The deity was worshipped by the Vaishnavas of the Madhvacharya Sampradaya. In the temple, there are some inscriptions said to be written by Sri Narahari Tirtha, who was in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya. And there is an elaborate translation of the inscriptions that are found there, and Srila Prabhupada's, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's translations of that. So I'll just skip it, but I'll describe what it says as we go on. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganda Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganda Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिन निति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। So we are going to go on a pilgrimage for the next 3 mornings. We will take you to certain places in Andhra Pradesh, in southern India. You see, most of us, or at least, well, I stay in India, so it's different for me, but most of you who are staying here, you don't go to India that often. And even when you do, you have very limited time at your disposal. And then naturally you want to go to the main holy places, Vrindavan, Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, and perhaps sometimes Dwarka, and maybe one or two other places. But there are also many other holy places which we do not get a chance to go to, maybe because we don't have the time, or we don't have the opportunity, or for whatever reason. The place that is geographically known as India today is filled with innumerable holy places, tirthas and dhamas. Tirtha is any holy place which has the capacity to purify us. The word tirtha means actually a ford, you know, water which you cross over. So a tirtha is a place where by going to which we can actually cross over the ocean of sinful life and reach to the other shore of the ocean of material existence. So usually a tirtha is a place where sages have performed austerities and penances and devotional service, and also where the Lord himself has manifested and performed pastimes. The dham is a special kind of tirtha. It is much more potent because it is actually the residence, the place of residence and the manifestation of the Lord himself. So there are many tirthas and dhammas all over in India. And even though our most important places are, as I mentioned, Vrindavan, Mayapur and Jagannath Puri and the places around them, these other holy places are also very important for us, and it's at least worthwhile hearing about them. And the most important reason for that being that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited them. As Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur has said, Gaura Amar Jeshavasthane Korila Brahmana Range Sheshavasthana Heribo Ami Pranoi Bhakata Sange. He says, Gaur Amar, Amar, my Gauranga, sense of possessiveness. So those places, Jeshavasthane, so whichever places, holy places, that my Gauranga Mahaprabhu visited, and visited with great transcendental ecstasy, Sheshavasthana, those very places, Heribhuami, I shall see, Pranayi Bhakata Sange, in the company of loving devotees of the Lord. So the practice of going to the holy places of pilgrimage is an age-old one. And even Vaishnavas do go on such pilgrimages. And we go, of course, to the Brajamandal Parikrama, the Gaudamandal Parikrama, etc. But Mahaprabhu went on a long parikrama, long yatra to many, many holy places in South India and a little bit to the west also. And Kaviraj Goswami has described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita his visit to these holy places. And Srila Kaviraj Goswami himself clarifies that he has not been able to recount all the places that Mahaprabhu visited, firstly. And secondly, that he is not able to chronologically delineate the list of places to which Mahaprabhu traveled. So we will find, as we read the Madhya Lila, chapter 7, 8, 9, that these places are kind of mixed up, because you won't find it in the order in which you would have, if you made a logistical arrangement. You know, your yatra planners, let's say you're going on a big yatra and some devotees are planning out the whole yatra for you. So they'll make a logistical chain. Okay, you go from the south and go this way, and you go, logically, you know, you go along. But Mahaprabhu's travels didn't exactly follow that kind of logical, quote-unquote, logical train of thought. Kaviraj Goswami says that Mahaprabhu merely went wherever he felt like going. He just moved left and right and north and south and, you know, wherever. He just moved. So whichever holy place he encountered, and he stayed there for some time, and wherever his transcendental ecstasy took him, he went in that direction. Now, that's not something we want to imitate when we go on a yatra. In one sense, if you like, you could. It could be an experience. But because Mahaprabhu was traveling like that, it was hard to actually put any very clear pattern to it. But there is some kind of pattern, because he went from north to the south, and then he moved up again to the north through the western coast. And then eventually, after moving some places in the western part of India, he went back to Jagannath Puri after returning to the south again to one point. Now, I presume that all of you have some idea of the map of India, at least the external map. It will help us. So we'll go there to these places. Okay, can we have the first, just the title? Okay, I'll do that. Okay, so. Yeah, thank you. So I'll be showing some pictures as well. This is the one, right? Yeah. Of some of the places which have been very nicely arranged by Prashant. Is he here? He's gone on, okay. So the credit for these nice pictures goes to him. He did a lot of nice research. So, yes. So you see some of the pastime places which have been highlighted in this area. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri. And he decided in the month of Vaishak to go on a pilgrimage to places in South India. So he announced his decision to the devotees, and they were not happy about that because they feared the separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyhow, Mahaprabhu's will prevailed, and they gave him, Nityananda Prabhu arranged for a servant, Krishna Das, to accompany him. And the devotees went along with Mahaprabhu till Alalanath. Alalanath is a place some distance from Jagannath Puri, where Mahaprabhu used to go, especially during the time of the Anavasara, when Lord Jagannath does not give darshan. This is just before the Rath Yatra time. So after Alalanath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent all the other devotees back to Puri, and he proceeded southwards only in the company of his servant Krishna Das. And the first place that he came to as he moved in a southwesterly direction from Puri. So just imagine the part that's not shown here. The first blue icon that you see there, as you go to the northeast, that's where Puri is. So he came southwestwards, and he came to the first place, which was Kurmasthan or Kurmakshetra, about which we just read in the verse and the purport. Kaviraj Goswami describes that Mahaprabhu was completely intoxicated with Krishna Prema as he walked along. He was constantly chanting the holy names of Krishna. And especially Kaviraj Goswami mentions the Krishna, 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 hey, you know, the whole mantra. If time permitted, we would have liked to chant the whole song. But then that will take up quite a bit of time. So in any way, he kept chanting and he delivered everyone who saw him and who came in contact with him. So everywhere that Mahaprabhu traveled, people would get so struck with wonder upon seeing him that they would all become devotees and they would take shelter of his lotus feet. So in this way he traveled, and finally he came to Kurmakshetra. These are some of the places. Kurmakshetra, the next one near Vishakhapatnam is Simhachalam. And then you go down to Kovur, which is the bank of the Godavari River, the holy Godavari River, where he had the dialogue with Ramananda Rai. Then he further went down to Mangalagiri, the temple of Lord Narasimha, Pana Narasimha. So we'll be talking about the first three places, hopefully, today. I'll talk about the importance of these places and so on. Okay. So now let's talk about the Sri Kurmam temple, which was the first major place of pilgrimage that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encountered after he left Alalanath. As Srila Prabhupada has mentioned here, that it is a well-known place of pilgrimage and it has a deity of Kurmadev, one of the expansions and incarnations of Lord Krishna. It is perhaps the only major temple of Lord Kurma in the world, as far as I know. There could be some minor temples of Kurmadev here and there somewhere in India. But as far as major temples are concerned, this is probably the only one. We have many temples of Lord Narasimha and other deities. But for Kurma, the tortoise incarnation of the Lord, this is probably the only major one. Here, Kurmadev is known as Kurmanath, Kurmanath Swami. And he is accompanied by Lakshmi Devi, who is known as Kurmanayaki. And the deity is interesting because he's the tortoise. And the deity has three stone structures. The first is the head, the next is the torso, and the third is the tail, which is like the Sudarshan Chakra. So I'll show you some of the pictures, and you'll notice the architecture is very interesting and intricate, very elaborate. They're mostly all stone. And you'll see how much time and energy it must have taken and skill it must have taken to set up and construct these temples. It wasn't easy at all. It took probably generations to do this. It's a mixture of the Odian and South Indian styles because this place is at the junction of the East and the South. You know, Odisha and Andhra, the Odia and Telugu cultures blend in this whole region. So we will find a mix of different architectural styles over here. So this is some familiar site that you will see in South India. The intricacy of the architecture. Kurmasthan. Sthan means a place, or Kshetra also means place. And here is a picture of the deity, Sri Kurmam. The presiding deity, Lord Kurma, is self-manifest, or Swayambhu. He is about 70 centimeters long, shaped like the shell of a turtle. The deity's tail is a shalagram. So again, very interesting. There are other deities also in this temple. One is a deity that was found in the lake, in the tank that is associated with this temple of Govindaraj. That's a deity of Lord Vishnu, along with his two energies, Bhu and Shri, Bhu Devi and Shri Devi. And much later, Narahari Tirtha installed deities of Lord Ram, Sita, and Lakshman. And in the architecture, yeah, I think we have also Narahari Tirtha installed this deity of Yoga Narasimha Dev. He's in the yoga pose, seated in the pose doing some asana, right? Now, you know that Narasimha deity in Mayapur is an Ugra form. He's really looking very fierce. But here Narasimha Dev is absorbed in some kind of meditation. And there at Kurmakshetra, they also have preserved a certain breed of tortoises, the turtles that are in that local area. So it's a kind of a wildlife preservation center. So somehow or the other, there seem to be many tortoises in that area. So draw whatever conclusion you may from that. And they have preserved them, they feed them a certain special kind of grass or something. And just last October, this was also my very first visit to Kurmasthan. We went in a yatra. So I have also never been to this place till October last year. And I told the devotees, the reason we chose this place and some of the places around, I said, most of us are perhaps never ever going to go there again in our life. Okay, so this is a once in a life visit. So those of you who can come, who come, so there were many devotees who came. Of course, some may go again, yes, but mostly, you know, if you have time, people mostly go to Vrindavan, Mayapur and so on. So in any case, very interesting. These tortoises, they're all there. They have a, seem like they're having a good time there. There. And here the temple courtyard. See the typical architecture. You have the temple in the center, the temple building, and then there is a courtyard, and sometimes there's a passage all around the temple, and after that there is a whole boundary that's again built of some structure. And there's a beautiful tank, a water tank, a lake that's there. I'll tell you the history of that shortly. It's called Shweta Pushkarni. You know, in South India especially, you will find that there are tanks, or water tanks, or small lakes that are associated with every ancient temple. To some degree, you find that in North India, but not that much. In Braj, you will find many, many water tanks. Actually, there used to be many more, dozens and dozens more, but they've all dried up. Only a few of the important ones are remaining. And some devotees are trying to revive these lakes again. Somehow, they've all dried up. But in South India, you will find in every major ancient temple of any historical and spiritual importance, there will be a tank along with it. It's called a Pushkarni. So somehow Radha Gokulananda here also has a Pushkarni. Maybe someday we should do some boat festivals or something. I don't know if we do that. Have you done that here anyway? Yes. Boat festivals or something. So it's like a Pushkarni. You know, so every temple should have some Pushkarni associated with it. And Kurmasthan, although I won't discuss this in detail, is also the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed two important pastimes with his devotees. One is that he instructed the Kurma Brahmana who wanted to go with him. And he gave him that famous instruction of how he should always speak about Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Jari dekho tare kaho Krishna upadesh, amar agyay guru hana tara ei desh. So whoever you see, tell them about Krishna. And in this way, deliver the whole land. So this very famous instruction was given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Kurma Brahman. And also, he delivered another Brahmana called Vasudev, who had leprosy. And just by embracing him, all his leprosy vanished, his ugliness vanished, and he became a beautiful man again. So these two pastimes happened there. We won't discuss that. I'm just mentioning that in the passing. So we'll come back to discussing some of the history of this temple now. It is, of course, some distance southwest of Jagannath Puri and northeast of a place called Visakhapatnam, Vizag. Visakhapatnam is named after Vishakha. We would like to believe that it is our Vishakha Devi, but they have some other explanation for that Vishakha. So in Kurmakshetra, there's a very ancient history that goes back long, long ages ago. There was a king called Shweta Chakravarti, and his wife's name was Vishnu Priya. She was a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Now one time, it was Ekadashi, and the king approached his queen. But because it was Ekadashi, she didn't reciprocate with the king's overtures. But the king was insistent and adamant. So not wanting to indulge in any such activity on Ekadashi especially, and knowing it was not a proper time, the queen requested repeatedly the king to desist. But the king did not desist. So she prayed to Lord Vishnu very fervently. And Lord Vishnu manifested a cascade of water there. And that cascade of water was between the two, the king and the queen. And somehow it swept away the king to a place that became known later as Shweta Giri. Giri means a mountain. And there the king found himself. Vishnu Priya also followed him naturally. When your husband is swept away, you follow and find out where he's gone. So she followed him. And she was there, and he wasn't in good condition. At that time, Narad Muni appeared there, and he gave him a mantra to chant, and the Kurma Narayana mantra. And he chanted the mantra, and the Lord appeared there as Kurma Dev. And he was the king was very happy to have this darshan. He was blessed, and he requested. But he was still not all right, actually. And at that time, the Lord, from his Sudarshan Chakra, he manifested this lake, this Pushkarni that we just saw here. So he manifested this, and then the king took his bath there, and he regained his good health. And out of gratitude and devotion, the king requested the Lord to manifest himself as a deity. And that is how the deity of Lord Kurma appeared in Kurmakshetra. It's a very, very ancient deity. So this pond or this kund is named after the king, Shweta Chakravarti. Therefore, it's called Shweta Pushkarni. Later, there was a tribal king who was there. And this tribal king understood from Shweta Chakravarti about the glories of this place. And he came here, he bathed in this holy tank, and he also began to worship the deity of Lord Kurma. And time went by, and he began to stay in an ashram that was near this place. And because of his fervent devotion, the Lord actually turned westwards. Normally, if you see traditionally, deities faced the east, in the temples face the eastern direction. But there are some temples where it's not like that. And this is one of those exceptions where the deity turned around to face their pure devotee. And so the deity is facing westward. So therefore there are two dhvaja stambha. Stambha means a pillar. Dhvaja means a flag. So usually these ancient Vaishnava temples have these pillars that are in front of the deity, so the deity can see them. So now because the deity had one time been facing eastwards and now facing westwards, so dhvaja stambhas are found in both sides, the eastern and the western sides. So it's rather unusual. So in any case, some people say that it was Bilva Mangal Thakur because of whom this happened. But there are no authentic historical documents either way. So we just rely on local folklore and the Sthala Puranas. You see, all these holy places, the Tirthas and Dhamma, they have associated records of what people many generations ago wrote down. So most of them are based on the scriptures and some of them are based just on oral tradition as the narrations have been passed down from ages. So it is said that Durvasa Muni visited this place along with his disciples, and so did Lava and Kush, the sons of Lord Ram. Some say that Lord Balaram also visited when he was going on the pilgrimage of holy places just before during the Mahabharata war. And now we'll come to the role that Sri Ramanujacharya played here. Srila Prabhupada mentions this here. Now it's very interesting, when Ramanujacharya came to Jagannath Puri, he saw that the worship of the Lord was not going on properly as per his estimation, because it wasn't happening according to the Pancharatra Agama Shastras. You know, the process of deity worship has to go according to the Pancharatriki system. There are Agama Shastras, certain types of scriptures, the Pancharatrika Agama Shastras, that detail how the worship of the deity should be done. And Ramanujacharya had established such worship according to the Narada Pancharatra and other such Vaishnava Agama Shastras in South India, in places like Sri Rangam, etc. So when he came to Jagannath Puri, he was surprised to find that these scriptural injunctions were not being followed. Now Jagannath Puri is very unique because there are many traditions and customs and religious practices and methods of worship that are followed there that are not followed in any other place, in any other Vaishnava place. It's rather unique because Lord Jagannath is a rather active deity and he really reciprocates with his devotees. And many times, out of regard and devotion for his devotees, he orders that certain methods of worship should be instituted henceforth. Like some devotee, a lady called Karma Bai, she cooked a certain type of khichdi and she would offer it in her home. And it's a long story, but then Jagannath was so pleased with her worship at home that he wanted that khichdi to be offered to him. So he appeared in the dream of the pujaris, and therefore every day now that very khichdi is called Karma Bai's khichdi is offered to Lord Jagannath. So there are many changes that Lord Jagannath has personally instructed the pujaris to do, sometimes through the king when he appears in a dream, sometimes to the pujaris when he appears in a dream again, or there's some other indication. So therefore there are many practices that have evolved over the years, and also there are many practices that were stated by the Lord to Indradyumna himself right at the very beginning. So the process of worship in Jagannath Puri is quite unique. For example, we see even Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when he came there and he saw that the pujaris were offering starched cloth to the deities, he was shocked. You know, and because generally you're not supposed to wear cloth that is starched unless it's washed. So the time of making it, perhaps people may starch it, but then you can't wear a set of clothes, starched clothes. So we have to wash them before we wear them. But they were just offering it straight away. So when Pundarik Vidyanidhi saw that this was not, the starch cloth was being offered, he found fault with it. And that night Jagannath appeared in his dream and slapped him on his cheeks. And then Pundarik Vidyanidhi went to Swarup Damodar, or rather Swarup Damodar came to Pundarik Vidyanidhi's home asking why he had not come for the Mangalarati, you know, in the early morning darshan. And he saw that Pundarik Vidyanidhi's face was swollen and red. And then Pundarik Vidyanidhi revealed the secret. So Jagannath has this tradition of being rather possessive about the way the worshipping is being done, and he doesn't like anyone interfering in that, as he demonstrated in the case of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So when Ramanujacharya had come, this was of course much earlier, more than 800 years ago. So at that time, Ramanujacharya also saw that the worship was not exactly as per the Agama Shastras, the Pancharatrika Agama Shastras. So he was thinking that I will change this. So he spoke to the king. The king was also quite influenced by the scholarship and devotion and the charisma of Ramanujacharya. The king was discussing with the pujaris, but the pandas didn't want to change anything that had been set up for so many centuries. So they were very reluctant. But the king was very firm. And he said, tomorrow morning, we are going to start this new method of worship that has been taught to us by Ramanujacharya. Somehow that night when Ramanujacharya was resting, Lord Jagannath did some miracle. He transferred Ramanujacharya from his place of residence in Jagannath Puri to Kurmakshetra. When Ramanujacharya woke up in the morning, he found himself in a different place. And that is what Prabhupada is mentioning here. That one night, when he was resting in Jagannath Puri, the Lord transferred him to Kurmakshetra. So when he woke up in the morning, he realized he was in a different place. And he was wondering what happened. And he looked around, then he went out, he didn't find his disciples, he became worried for them. And the disciples too woke up, and they didn't see Ramanujacharya, and they were worried for him, where has our spiritual master gone? So they set out in search for him. So Jagannath basically did not want Ramanujacharya to change anything. So when the pandas woke up in the morning feeling, oh, what's going to happen now? We'll have to change all this process of worship. This Acharya from South India has come and he wants to change everything. But when they woke up in the morning, Ramanujacharya didn't turn up in the temple. They were waiting and waiting. Finally, they found his place empty. And then the king had to take a decision. He said, okay, just continue with your process of worship that you've been doing. So Ramanujacharya then woke up in Kurmakshetra. He didn't know what this place was. Then he saw the temple. He asked them, where is the temple? So someone directed him to the temple. And he initially thought it was a temple of Lord Shiva, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport here. Because the deity looked like a Shiva Linga, a deity of Shiva. So he fasted. He sat there. And then gradually it was revealed to him that actually this was not a deity of Lord Shiva, but actually it was a deity of Lord Kurma, Kurmadev. Now, Kurmadev, of course, is a special deity. When Ramanujacharya understood that, he had the installation ceremony as per the Vaishnava Narada Pancharatras. And a grand ceremony was done. Meanwhile, he had to argue with the local priests, and he convinced them that this was actually a Vaishnava shrine. It was a deity of Kurmadev and not a deity of Lord Shiva. And then, once again, the worship of the Lord as Kurmadev was begun. Meanwhile, the disciples of Ramanujacharya decided that their spiritual master must have headed for Sri Rangam. So they also set out from Jagannath Puri, hoping that they would meet him at one of the holy places on the way. And as they came to Kurmakshetra, and they inquired about Srila Ramanujacharya, by this time Ramanujacharya had become rather well known there in Kurmakshetra because of all that he had done in the last few days. So it was not difficult for the disciples to find him. So they found him. And so they stayed there for some time, they worshipped the deity, and then they left further ahead. So this was a very major event that happened. Otherwise, perhaps, till today, had it not been for Ramanujacharya, people would have still thought that this temple was a temple of Lord Shiva. So this is the important role that Srila Ramanujacharya has played in Kurmakshetra. Then time passed by, and then came along Narahari Tirtha, who was a disciple of Srila Madhvacharya. There are many inscriptions there, which Srila Prabhupada mentions from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purports. And in those inscriptions, there is a historical narration about how Narahari Tirtha came there to Kurmakshetra. He actually became the king there. He was a sannyasi, but he became a king. And he ruled there for some time. And it is largely due to the services of Narahari Tirtha that this place has become a seat of Vaishnava worship now, so well known. So Narahari Tirtha was instrumental in popularizing this because, as Prabhupada has mentioned in the purport, the kings of Vijayanagar, they patronized the priests and the worship of this temple. They sponsored everything and they were very charitable and devout kings. And their guru was Narahari Tirtha. That is how Narahari Tirtha came here. And he set up an elaborate system of worship. And he also appointed people from the Madhvacharya Sampradaya to oversee the worship, to see that things would go along according to the Madhvacharya Sampradaya's rules and regulations. So it is said that Narahari Tirtha also drove away some tribals, the Shabaras, who attacked this temple. And personally, Narahari Tirtha fought with them and drove them away. So Narahari's contribution is very significant here. Now coming to this Pushkarni, there is a central thing there. You can see a little small temple there. And below that, and there is sand. It is white sand. This sand is also called Gopi Chandan. And local folklore has it that Krishna came here with his gopis, or the queens, they say. And therefore, this white-colored sand that is at the bed of this lake is also called Gopi Chandan. And interestingly, in this architecture of this temple, you will see these pillars. Each of these pillars is unique. And it's called the Ekashila. There's only one rock. The pillars are made of one slab of rock, each pillar, and is uniquely designed. And there are many such architectural marvels over here. And we did see the tortoises, yes. And now after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu moved on after Kurmasthan. And we'll come to the holy place of Simhachalam. Very important place. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in chapter 8, Madhya Leela, Mahaprabhu, Kaviraj Goswami has described in chapter 8, text 3, Purvarite Prabhu age gamana karila Jiyodunrsimha khetre kato dine gela. According to his previous program, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went forward on his tour and after some days arrived at the place of pilgrimage known as Jiyodunrsimha. I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport on this. The Jiyodunrsimha temple is situated on the top of a hill about 5 miles away from Vishakhapatnam. There is a railway station on the South Indian Railway known as Simhachala. The temple known as Simhachala is the best temple in the vicinity of Vishakhapatnam. The temple is very affluent and is a typical example of the architecture of the area. On one stone tablet, it is mentioned that formerly a queen covered the deity with a gold plate. This is mentioned in the Vishakhapatnam Gazetteer. About the temple, there are residential quarters for the priests and devotees. Indeed, at the present moment, there are many residential quarters to accommodate visiting devotees. The original deity is situated within the depths of the temple, but there is another deity, a duplicate known as Vijayamurti. The smaller deity can be moved from the temple and taken on public processions. Priests who generally belong to the Ramanuja Sampradaya are in charge of the deity worship. So when Mahaprabhu came here, naturally he fell flat, dandavat pranam he offered to the deities. He chanted, he danced, he recited many verses, and Kaviraj Goswami describes that, but I'll not go so much into that as I mentioned earlier. And we'll talk a little bit about the temple itself. This is again, just look at the architecture. Yes, so grand, gorgeous architecture, so intricate. See how long it must have taken and what skill it must have required to carve such deities in stone. And here also you see there is a Pushkarani. It's very beautiful actually. And here the deity is interesting. The deity is a blend of Varahadev, Varaha incarnation of the Lord, and Narasimhadev. So it's a mixed incarnation. The head is of a boar, of Varahadev. The torso is human-like. And the tail is like a lion. So this Varaha Lakshmi Narasimha temple, a very unique temple. It also has a history that goes back a long way. And it goes down to the time of Prahlad. Now we all know that Prahlad's father, Hiranyakashipu, used to persecute and harass his great exalted devotee son Prahlad. He tried to put him in the fire, but he was unsuccessful to kill Prahlad. He put him in a pit of poisonous snakes. He tried all sorts of black magic. He tried to kill him by attacking him with weapons. He tried so many different things to kill Prahlad. He also put him under the feet of wild elephants to crush him to death. But the elephants did not do any harm to Prahlad. One of the things that Hiranyakashipu did to Prahlad was that he threw him from the top of a mountain into the ocean. So this place is called Simhachalam. Achala refers to a hill, also called Simhagiri. Giri also means hill. So it is said that Hiranyakashipu personally threw young Prahlad from the top of this hill into the ocean. The hill at that time was much bigger, and he threw him. And it is said that the Lord appeared just at the last moment. And not only did Hiranyakashipu throw Prahlad, but he also threw a mountain on top of him. And just at the very last moment, the Lord appeared and lifted the hill a little, wee little bit, to take Prahlad out so that he would not get crushed under the mountain. Interesting that the Lord waited till the last minute. You know, when we are in difficulty and we pray to the Lord, we want the Lord to come instantly. And if the Lord doesn't come immediately, we tend to doubt the Lord. Why has the Lord not reciprocated with my prayer, with my call? But the Lord will come in course of time. He tests our faith. He tests our patience. And many times, such a wait, which can be excruciating for the devotee, is meant for the purification of that devotee. In that eager expectation and anticipation of the Lord's mercy coming, the devotee's intensity of meditation upon the Lord grows. So the devotion of the devotee also gets enhanced. So when Prahlad was falling and he was in free fall, you know, he was only remembering the Lord as he was doing in all other instances when Hiranyakashipu tried to kill him. And he didn't doubt the Lord, I'm falling, my dear Lord, why haven't you come, why haven't you come? He didn't say that, he was just peaceful. Rakhe Krishna mare ke, mare Krishna rakhe ke. If Krishna wants to kill someone, who can save him? If Krishna wants to save someone, who can kill him? So Prahlad had complete faith in this, and he knew that if this is what the Lord wants, then so be it. But then the Lord appeared and he saved him. And Prahlad was of course taken back to the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu. And after the Lord had appeared as Narasimhadev and he had killed Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad came here once again. He remembered with gratitude what the Lord had done for him. And he prayed. Actually, when the Lord had saved Prahlad, he asked him for a benediction. And Prahlad asked that the Lord should appear in a form that was a combined form of the form that he appeared in when he killed his uncle Hiranyaksha, Varahadev that is, and the form that he would in future take when he would come to rescue him. That is the form of Narasimha. So Prahlad knew that the Lord would appear before him in a certain form. So he requested the Lord to appear in this combined form of Varaha and Narasimha. And the Lord obliged, and he appeared in the form of this deity, which is again self-manifest. And Prahlad made a grand temple there, but then that was way back in Satya Yuga. The time passed, and due to the ravages of time, the temple could no longer be seen. One time, however, the Sthala Purana says of that region, the great king Pururava, who is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, was flying overhead in his Pushpak Viman, which had been given to him by Brahma. And he saw this place. He was traveling with Urvashi, the heavenly damsel, the Apsara. And he descended to this place because it looked so beautiful. And as they were sporting there, they discovered the ruins of something that resembled a temple. And they found this temple, which was now run down. And the Lord appeared to Urvashi in a dream. And they were able to excavate the original deities and reinstall them in a grand temple again. A new temple was built. And the Lord appeared to Urvashi in the dream and told her that every day I must be smeared with sandalwood pulp. So that practice was started. And till today that practice continues. And because the deity is always covered in sandalwood, it resembles a Shivalinga, resembles the deity of Lord Shiva. And anyway, so time passed. And somehow people started thinking this was also a temple of Lord Shiva. And number one, because the deity resembled a Shivalinga. Secondly, because the temple tank of water was called Gangadhara, which is the name of Lord Shiva. And for various other reasons, the gate there was also called Bhairava Dwar. Bhairava is a form of Lord Shiva. So therefore people assume that this was also a temple of Lord Shiva. Now here again comes Ramanujacharya into the picture. When Ramanujacharya came there, he understood that this was Varaha Narasimha deity. So he had extensive discussions with the scholars, and he proved that according to the Pancharatrika Agama Shastras, that this Tribhanga Roop, threefold bending form of the Lord, was actually a form of Vishnu and not a form of Lord Shiva. So there were debates that went on for some time. Finally, all the local scholars accepted the version of Ramanujacharya. And once again, he instituted the worship of the deity according to the Vaishnava Pancharatra Agama Shastras. When Ramanujacharya saw the smearing of sandalwood, he said, no, this is one of the reasons the confusion has happened. So he said, take off the sandalwood. Now, this version is disputed by some Sri Vaishnavas. So in any case, we don't know. This is some folklore that comes down. We cannot say with certainty whether this is actually what happened, but we just say it because that's part of the folklore of that region. So they said at that time, the deity started bleeding, indicating that the deity wanted to be covered with sandalwood pulp. So Ramanujacharya then instructed that the smearing of sandalwood pulp on the deity should continue, and that continued till today. And there is only one day on which the entire sandalwood covering is removed. And that sandalwood is then given as prasadam, mahaprasadam, to all the visiting pilgrims and devotees. Now this is very interesting, because this happens on the day of Akshaya Tritiya. What do you remember about Akshaya Tritiya? What happens on Akshaya Tritiya? Ocean of milk was churned, yes. Actually, there was so many incidents that happened on that day, including Lakshmi's appearance, and many, many things happened. But specifically, this is one day on which in all Vaishnava temples, the deities of Vishnu or Krishna or Ram are smeared with sandalwood pulp. Actually, the Chandan Yatra festival is for 21 days, you know, culminating in starting on Akshaya Tritiya. But definitely on Akshaya Tritiya, this beautiful devotional service is done. And if you go to Vrindavan on Akshaya Tritiya, it's a beautiful sight. Devotees go to all the temples, and in every temple, the deities are gorgeously decorated with sandalwood pulp that has been smeared on the deities. Sometimes they color them with pigments so that you have sandalwood pulp that is of different colors, and they decorate them with various kinds of dots and designs and so on. They make what they call a phool bangla, which means a cottage of flowers, and because it's very hot, so they spray rose water on everybody, and it's like a very festive and beautiful time to go. Generally, devotees from the West don't like to go at that time because it's so hot. Akshaya Tritiya is generally considered to be the hottest day of the year, which is why the smearing of sandalwood paste is done in the first place, to cool the body of the Lord down. We all know the story of Madhavendra Puri and how he was dispatched by the Lord to go to get Malaya Chandan so that the deity of Gopal could be smeared. So in any case, this happens on Akshaya Tritiya. In some temples, they do it for 21 days. In some temples, for a week. In some temples, for only one day on Akshaya Tritiya. In any case, at least on Akshaya Tritiya, that is the one day on which the deities are smeared with sandalwood pulp. But this is probably the only temple at Simhachalam, Jiyoda Narasimha Temple, the Varaha Lakshmi Narasimha Temple, where on Akshaya Tritiya the sandalwood is removed, not smeared. And this is the only day on which you can actually see the form of the deity. That's why it's called the Nijarupa. Nijarupa means the self-same form of the Lord. So this is the only day on which you can actually see what the deity looks like. And you see that in the picture here. Otherwise, the deity is smeared with sandalwood and you can't get to understand the real form. So this is something special about this place. So when Ramanuja came here, of course, he instituted this worship here. This temple at Simhachalam is actually the second most famous and the second most wealthy temple in the province of Andhra Pradesh, which is the first. I think you all know that. Which is the wealthiest and the most well-known? In Andhra Pradesh. Padmanabh is in another state. We'll come to that probably day after tomorrow. Tirupati, Tirumala, Balaji, Venkateshwara, okay, is the wealthiest and the most well-known temple in the province of Andhra Pradesh. But after that, this is Simhachalam, is the most famous. It's just a few miles away from the city of Visakhapatnam, which is a very important city. So here were some pictures. Okay, so we'll see. See the temple carvings on the walls. You know, so intricate, so beautiful, depicting Lord Narasimha. Here is Lord Narasimha, they're killing Hiranyakashipu. And here also is another deity in the walls. Here is a bird's eye view of the whole temple complex. Grand structures that have stood the ravages of time. The fine carving. And look at this beautiful Pushkarani here, the Tirtham. And usually these will have some central structure where there's a central temple. Even if you go to Udupi, you'll see that everywhere. So these are the deities. And here you see, because it's every day this sandalwood is scraped, is applied. So they need a lot of sandalwood. So you have these priests and others who every day grind sandalwood so that that can be applied to the deity. And on Akshaya Tritiya day, people especially go not just to see the original form of the deity, which is not visible on other days, but also to get a bit of that Mahaprasadam Chandan. And then they mix it in water and drink it. Or sometimes they may just take a little bit and taste it. Or sometimes they may apply it to the forehead. You know. So this is the Utsava deity, which Prabhupada mentions here. As you know, in most Vaishnava temples you have the Mool Vigraha, the main deity. And then you have the Utsava deity. Utsava deity is a festival deity who are taken out for processions and Shobha Yatras, you know, so on. So this is a view of that whole region from the hill, from Visakhapatnam. It's very beautiful, this whole coastal area. Okay, so that's the next topic which we'll do tomorrow. So today we've talked about Sri Kurmakshetra or Kurmasthan and the place of Simhachalam, also called Jiyada Narasimha, because there was one devotee called Jiyada. There's another history to that, okay, which is part of folklore. So he's known as Jiyada Narasimha. So we'll stop here. Any comments or questions?